This is Dave Seibel, and what you're going to hear is on this tape is an interview with Al Jacobson Jr., Paul Johnson Jr. It was on Friday the 13th, January 13th, 1989, and the interview took place at the JSJ headquarters out on Robbins Road. Al's father, back in the teens, I'm talking about 1914-15, was a school teacher and had was working part-time in the summers at the American Brass Novelty Company here in Grand Haven. Paul's dad was a tool and die maker, and it was out of this combination, and they knew one another up in Muskegon where they lived, and you'll hear about that in the tape. But it was out of this combination that the team developed, that later developed into JSJ. The first voice you're going to hear, of course, is mine, but immediately after mine will be Paul Johnson's, and then you'll get the difference between Al's voice and Paul's voice. So let's listen to the tape. Well, we have two of the remaining founders. I consider them founders of the JSJ Corporation. And interesting that we've got an Al Jr. and a Paul Jr. because your dad's Al Sr., Paul Sr. And as I was saying, 20 years from now, when people listen to this tape, they're not going to know whose voice is which, so you can make sure you identify yourself. But in starting it out, I was just commenting that back when your dads were beginning all of this, back in the teens, and it was a post-World War One time, there was a whole group of people who were your friends, Stansbury, Hatton, Ringelberg, Reichert, Yonker, Harbeck, who were all getting started about the same time. And then, of course, World War II is when you came back to Grand Haven to really get things going. I don't know if that's significant, but it's of interest to me as a historian.
Well, it's probably coincidental. We probably would have coming back, yeah, whether it was World War II or not, you know,
yeah,
kind of thing. At least we were sort of brought up with the idea that
you came back. That you came back.
Yeah. Were your dads in the service, by the way?
No, my dad.
Neither one.
Uh-huh.
No.
Yeah.
I think they were just sort of at rank. First, my father was in the...
Well, they were exempt.
Yeah, my father was...
Your dad was exempt.
Toolmaker.
As a toolmaker, I know that. Yeah. And...
Your dad was a teacher.
Yeah, my dad was a teacher.
Manual arts teacher.
Uh-huh.
And World War I. Yeah.
That had to be... I think that's one of the first, if not the first, manual arts hack. We set up that manual arts training.
Oh, yeah, that was very, a separate
very
building. It was regular operation, a very serious business.
Mm-hmm. We had something similar in Jackson, but probably not.
Well, Stan Heaven had a good thing, but that was quite a bit later.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Earl Babcock started a...
But that was...
That's in the 30s.
Yeah, but that isn't when it was was pure manual training.
No.
Basic skill.
Where did your dads meet?
They lived very close to each other.
Well, one lived above them for a while.
Well, I know the skeet. My grandparents lived... in fact, I go by it every day. Charlie gets me. I say, no, there's like... One day I stopped to see who was living there. It's in like a black neighborhood. It's right along the highway. It was on Southern Avenue, Southern and Seaway Drive. It's out of the corner. And Al's grandparents lived
in Washington.
Washington is right across from the school.
Nelson School.
And they aren't more than two blocks apart, really.
I still think that... at one time they lived in the same house.
I know that
because my dad said that they lived above your parents lived above our parents for a while.
Oh, well, I was thinking way before that when they first met. I can remember the house we first lived in Grand Haven, right across from the City Hall. I looked at it all the time. The two books.
Not the, oh, the what do they call it? The flats.
Uh-huh. Yeah. On the east side of it.
Yes.
The flat on the east side.
Close to the church there.
Yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Sure.
The other side was a woman doctor who had a good looking niece that lived with her. And we moved out there as a kindergarten so you could see it.
Well, did your folks continue to live in Muskegon?
No, they moved down here, right, and lived. Who was the greenhouse guy?
Franks?
No.
Joe Nellis?
No, before that.
I don't know. I sort of remember where it was.
Colfax, anyway.
Yeah, there was a greenhouse there.
And they lived, when they first came down here, lived in that one.
That wasn't DeYoung, not Ralph DeYoung.
Okay. They had a... we're sort of reminiscing now on the brass foundry some of the times. Yeah. Now we sort of get different slants, but because I don't remember this per se, but I sort of remember it. They had a Ford. I don't know whether
it was a Ford.
Model A or Model A, I think it was. Model A Ford, but it didn't have a very good radiator.
What year was it?
I don't know.
It had been 1918.
There's a T.
1919.
It was a Model T.
Whatever it is, had a leaky radiator. Put water in the radiator, was just enough to go from do it to both houses. You're going to pick off two guys and get to the brass club.
They had one car between them.
They eventually had the second car.
As well into the after the 40s that they had two cars.
You're kidding. Is that right?
They pick each other up each morning.
Huh.
But the odds are, first we both had those Buicks. Each had a Buick.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God, had a big 70-passenger Buick.
Yeah. Yeah. Those. But that was in the 30s. But,
where do you want to start from?
Well, your remembrance of the brass foundry and the history of it.
The brass foundry is going to be a different
story. Well, yes, I realize that. But that's where you...
Well, Al spent all
you cut
time
your
there.
Teeth, and you worked there too, Paul.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. 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 You worked there especially. Prohibition was good to us there. Well, mother would never agree to that.
No,
she was really
the women never agreed to it.
They had to enjoy it a little bit.
But the biggest number of employees Brass Foundry ever had was during in the 30s.
Depression time.
Yep. In the up until. I don't have it officially now, but it's somewhere in the 36, 37 when we had the beer business.
Hmm. And that was after Prohibition then?
No. Yeah, after Prohibition.
Yeah.
When Prohibition was repealed.
Yes, right.
In the 30s, and this is when the fellow from New York came and wanted beer equipment. That's when we had the largest number of employees at the brass foundry.
That's something.
Not the largest sales. We had the largest number of employees.
The whole country's playing catch up.
Right.
And production of beer kegs.
And that lasted till about 1938-39.
Now you both were working there then?
Oh yeah.
No,
No,
because I was at school.
Working summertime there.
Summertime, but I'd say I worked there earlier than that, but I worked in summers in 36, 36 and part of 37 at the Stamp Products. So I never worked at the brass foundry after that. So I was in college. In fact, it's the end of the first year, maybe summer of 36 and 37 at Stamp Products.
And I worked 38 and 39 at the Stamp Products in my tool room.
Then I was
40
at stayed right at school.
41 at Tate. No, 40 at Tate. 40 and 41 at Tate.
Now, Dave.
But the brass foundry worked the summers 30. Yeah, that'd be 36, 37, and 38 and 39 at the brass foundry, 38, 39, 40, and 41
at Tate. Now, Date was originally down where the road, torn down.
It was torn down.
Yeah. But the original brass foundry was right down there, too.
The original brass foundry was right next to where Dornbaugh's Fisheries was.
Oh, on that side. Okay, I see. Well, all right. So it'd be across the street from Date.
No, the one that burned down. The one that burned down was, I can't think of the name of the street, but I could draw it. If you compare this, Dake's on this corner.
Where's the highway?
Highway's right
okay.
here.
All right.
There's Dake's.
All right.
You come down here, make this turn. This is that Hatton Park. This is a little dead end thing back here. It was right in here.
Oh, yeah.
The one that burned down.
Where is the junkyard, the metal?
That's over. This is where the railroad track is right here.
There. All right.
I mean, the junkyard. It's right in here.
Right. Because the river's right here.
This should be elongated.
Uh-huh.
Right where the road commission is.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. And that's where I'm a. So there was always a close relationship between Dake and.
I don't remember the
no,
name.
No relation.
No, yeah. No, not really, because the brass foundry took over the business of Zerner, which wasn't much of a business.
Wasn't anything.
Yeah.
You want? We'll get that history.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
Not very much, really, but
yeah.
I heard. Right the ground the night I was born.
Yes, 23rd, December 23.
But anyway,
and they picked up stakes and went over to where you are now.
That's right. Well, we can get, that's not very open.
Okay, that's not right. Now the Stamp Products. That's,
I'll give you my version of the Stamp Products and he can give his version.
They're probably pretty close to the same. You know, you can't pick up Dates that well. Somebody would be very unusual to be able to pick up exact dates. You have to relate it to some other factor, like I know when the atomic bomb was dropped in Hiroshima, because I was my only leave during the wartime, and I knew right where I was and why. River in Northern California, you know, that kind of thing.
Oh, yeah.
How in the hell did I put that a time frame on that? I don't know.
Boy, I'll tell you, that is one date that sticks in people's mind. Pearl Harbor, everyone knows exactly where they were at Pearl Harbor. And the atomic bomb is one of them. And Kennedy's death is another. Mm-hmm. Well, anyway.
Yeah. Well, that's a kind of. So, yeah. I think that.
Well, anyway, my version per my father.
Yeah, all right.
On the Stamp Product. They were making refrigerators, making hinges for the town's refrigerator, Stamp and Cass.
Now, this is
Stamp Products was making refrigerator hardware.
But it wasn't Stamp Products. Or was it then?
It was Anderson Bowling. Anderson Bowling.
Manufacturing.
Yeah, and that's what you're saying down on the river.
Yeah.
Yeah. The end of Clinton or something.
Anderson Bowling. Now, the Paul's version of how our families got involved with the Anderson Bowling and Borman.
Right.
Well, you might be right on the way they got involved is because they owe the money, but I was talking of why they couldn't stay in the same operation because of
they were supplying hinges to a cast refrigerator hardware. Leave it at that. I don't know, but I think it was a cast hinge. And it got down to a point where they owed the brass foundry money. And then I think Paul's version of how they
separated,
why they couldn't get along. But my dad's version is that it came down to a point that either they pay the brass foundry or the brass foundry would take over the operation of the plant.
I think that's going to be a little fuzzy because at that stage of the game is when the Sherwoods came in.
Well, So they said, my dad said that they said may lay down either pay us or we'll take over the business. We'll buy you out, not take it over. We'll buy you out. Mm-hmm. So they literally bought out the Anderson Folding operation that was then on the Water Street. They moved it from Water Street up to the present Griffin Street location. And then because Uncle Paul had knew Emil Gall, he brought Emil Gall over to the Stamp Products, and they brought the shipping, Abe Keefe, who was the shipping clerk at the brass foundry, brought him and put the two of them in to operate the, and then Grand Haven changed the name to Grand Haven Stamp Products. And that's how when they did that, then they said Mr. Sherwood, but had Mr. Sherwood, so the three families.
He supplied extra money, probably part of the buyout. So then Mary was graduating from Michigan.
And in 31.
Yeah. So he came at that time, but very interestingly, this Keith, I don't think worked at the Stamp Products for more than 2 years or 3 years, but he got some stock like Emil did, you know, and he got sick, but he never came back to work there. And then he started his own business, and he still was, you know, 10% stockholder of the Stamp Products.
Uh-huh.
To this day, of course, the heirs have stock in JSJ. But he didn't work more than 2 or 3 years.
I didn't
years.
Know that.
No, not more than 2 or 3 years. And they used to gravel my father a little bit on that. You know, usually you get somebody in there, and he was good, well enough to start another business. He already had the stock.
What was now? You said that your dad knew Emil.
Was Emil? My father went. Served an apprenticeship with Shaw Crane with that
himself. Everybody in the foundry industry and tooling business in Muskegon served an apprenticeship at Shaw Box Crane.
13 years of age.
Right.
Stayed there.
Oh, yeah.
Three years. And then, of course, he went over, Hartshorne or something like that. He was a tool and die maker, became a foreman. And Emil Gall came and served his apprenticeship in this other place.
Okay.
So,
yeah.
Right there. Your kids left.
You want a real history story would be to find out how many people that started a business served their apprenticeship at some Shell Box Crane.
Huh.
And go to, and take almost the whole foundry industry of Muskegon. Campbell and Cannon and Lakey and Westran and all that.
Hmm.
The starting people served their apprenticeship at Shell Box Crane.
Hmm.
It's interesting.
What would be
Why? Well, because the leadership there?
Well, it was a good-sized company. They built cranes. They had tool and die makers. They had pattern makers. And they had a foundry. They had everything there. Mm-hmm. So you trained your own. To a certain extent, we still, to this day, have to train our own. Like the Dake, I don't know what they're doing now. We always had apprenticeship programs going. Personnel, things are quite a bit different with it. Things of electronics on the tool with single tools, and well, it isn't, it's not like it used to be, and it's for the better, of course, accuracy and so forth.
Okay, now you've got, they're both involved in the brass foundry together. Now you got the stamp products going, but now you're saying Emil and Keith were running that. Now your two dads were still back over at the brass foundry?
Well, they were always there. They were always really there. The others were more like investments, but of course you have to keep track of them.
Well, they are. You know, they were Paul's dad really supervised the stamp product.
Mm-hmm.
But they both were involved.
They were both involved.
Yeah.
You know, it was what, it's like that, but Emil, and actually for Emil Gall was sort of the lead guy. Then when Marion got in there after a few years, and was Marion and Emil, and then eventually Marion got out in the sales, and Emil was strictly in the shop. You know, he sort of evolved to
make a good partnership.
You know, they're absolutely the opposites. Mm-hmm. Emil was really. Did you know Emil Gall at all?
Oh, sure, sure. Yeah, sure, he was a member of the...
It's just ag, sir.
Sure.
Of course, I can't remember what stage you...
yeah, that I came in, one of the greatest things that ever came out of the brass foundry, of course, was the first historical marker in Grand Haven.
Hey, I want to know where that...
You know, we cannot find it.
I'll be... That really makes me mad.
I don't blame
you. I spent
you.
One heck of a long time.
I know you did. You had handset every one of those.
Yes. Which marker was this?
It
the
was
one in the that gave the Rex Robinson.
Oh, on the
sure.
Yeah, I thought that was just that was taken off.
They took it down when they redid the building.
Yeah.
They were supposed to. Pardon?
Probably somebody tossed it out.
Oh, I don't think they could.
You want to know another marker that is made by the brass foundry is the one that's down at the Escanaba Park.
Oh, okay.
You go look at that. That is a masterpiece.
Did you do that one too?
No. An engineer we had, Graft, who was an artist. He laid that out for that Escanaba Park.
I'll take a look at it.
Oh, you look at that one. That's a masterpiece. I remember making that dent for that thing.
Of course, the masterpiece we just got in to the museum is that the steering column for...
Dakes?
That's Dakes, isn't it?
The Dakes with the brass foundry. The brass in it is cast by the brass foundry.
Yeah.
There. During World War II. Actually, Dake was the... you know, in the wartime, you couldn't build the normal thing. So brass foundry did most of their work for Dake. The stamp products did all of theirs for Dake, all through World War II.
Hmm.
The stamp products assembled the capstans, windlasses, and steering gears. The brass foundry cast the, you know, had a lot of stuff in brass. And then,
oh, yeah. Well, 12-foot diameter propellers.
Were being made here?
Yeah.
Is that right?
That was the deal.
12? That wouldn't even fit in this room. Is that right? Yeah. At the brass foundry, you're casting those?
Yep.
Plus a lot of other stuff.
You had to cast it in what?
Section.
In
section. Section mold.
Sweet
mold.
Sweet.
Molding.
Uh-huh. And then, how would you weld them together? Just that, welded. I suppose.
No, they're cast as one piece.
She's talking about making the mold is made in sections.
Mold is made in sections by sweet molding because, you know, the contour of a...
Yeah, oh, sure.
That's not unusual.
Uh-huh.
That's the way most, up till now, were made. But,
well, after the war, you guys, all of you, Chuck came back and Dave was back. And you
we're the generation that you didn't, you just thought that way. That was an assumed assumption.
That you were going to come back. And
I mean, that we were in the 30s, and that you, tradition was different than it is now. Now you educate your kids to see the world.
Yes, right.
We weren't educated to see the world, and most of the guys that came back after the war came back to their hometown.
That's right. And that's what I was pointing out. You've got Bus Ringelberg, Julian Hatton. Now, Julian was third generation. But Riker, Yonker, and then all of your family. And there are probably others, too. I can't think of any other businesses.
Oh, yeah, we'll think of other businesses.
Yeah.
Well, the lead.
Okay.
Jim.
Of course, sure, sure.
Yeah. Of course, Jim Lee was killed during World War II.
Yes, right, yeah.
But,
what other Lee was there then?
Jim Gould.
Oh, Jim Gould, okay.
Not Jim Gould, but who's the Bob Gould.
Bob Gould.
Oh, yes, of course. And Bob Gould had been in the Coast Guard.
Well, he married a Lee.
Uh-huh, right. Okay.
So there's no other male.
There's no other male in the family.
Uh-huh.
So he came back as representing the Lee family.
Mm-hmm. Well, after you fellows, and how about Dake then? Was it after World War II that you acquired Dake? Or?
No, I bought it.
Well, you've got the Johnston Boiler Works, too.
Oh, of course, yes.
That's so right. All Marsh and Dave Johnston came back.
Mm-hmm.
That was even what Jake.
That might be fourth generation.
Fourth generation,
yeah.
Probably.
But nevertheless, they still had that tradition of coming back. That's interesting.
Yeah. Funny part is Johnson Brothers are doing better now than they've been doing in years.
Is that right?
That's understand.
Yeah.
They did real well. That one guy who owned it, and he got rid of it.
Whiteside.
No, something like that. As soon as the big outfits got a hold of it, you know, that it really is a. They don't have the same way of operating.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's ancient. The building and the process is ancient. You go into that place and heavens. Well, of course, I guess
it's pretty modern by today's standard. Gosh, they have a concrete floor. So. No, they didn't have it before. That was all. Sam, that's not until too many years ago.
Is that right?
Floor,
talk that way. The Dakes had a sand floor in the foundry,
sure,
but that was normal. I mean, yeah. It's built metal.
Uh huh.
Well, you matter of fact, you sort of dug the perfect castings. You dug the hole a little deeper.
Well, sand casting, sure. That's
yellow.
Been a tradition for years.
Well, George, how you doing?
For centuries.
Well.
You know, one thing, we were talking about the your historic marker. How much influence did Esther Dean have on you as far as history, or any of you? Because my impression of her was that she was kind of the stalwart when it came to the...
Well, she wasn't here when I was here.
Wasn't, no, she came back afterwards.
But her family had quite an influence on us. They were very good friends of our family.
Yeah, I would say the one that really was I didn't... She came back. I was in the school board when she came back. Grand Haven.
Okay.
And so she was in
the... I saw her in our growing up.
It was in the 40s.
Yeah, I was in school at 46. I think she came up 47. Back to Grand Haven.
Oh.
But Vin and Esther Dean Jim loved to. Jim was never serious for a moment on anything.
Ben
Erickson.
Erickson, okay.
Always. Esther Dean and Ben had a thing going all through the years. She was over at his house here. They are always arguing and talking and what have you. I got up and tired of that deal. I told you about Esther. We're running all around Rattles and Farm. We put out that loudest history. And there's Esther Dean claims we have the wrong baby in the picture.
Yes, oh yes, I know
but,
that.
Then we talked about it. We questioned whether there's any way Esther Dean could possibly ever know, because she's talking, she wasn't even born when that baby was so-called pictured. And we got talking about it anyway, that the damn thing was printed and nobody's going to know the difference down the line, because nobody could really tell you. We talked to other people. They said, well, I don't know. There's nobody around here that could tell you which baby it was, because there were several babies. But
it's the picture in the front of the book, I thought.
It's in the fold-out book.
Yeah, okay.
That's Esther Dean. But she wrote the history of the Presbyterian Church, you know, and that
yes.
was done.
Yeah.
Was that 37 or 34? What was it, the...
She wrote it?
100 years.
Oh.
There's
34 was our centennial, the city centennial.
And the church was 37.
Well, the church and the city are synonymous.
Yeah, I think it was a mission or something, or something, but anyway, there's the church. Esther D. wrote that 100-year history of the church.
But she didn't live here then.
No, she wrote it.
Huh. And she wrote it back then, you're saying? Back in 34?
Sure.
I'll be darned.
Huh. It was put out for the centennial.
Mm-hmm. Well, how did you get your... motivated you to do the history of that historic marker? I just assumed... But you had to do some research on that.
Oh, no, he was a worker. I was just a worker. I just laid out the letters.
Well, I wonder who did the...
After school is when I go out there and lay out that plaque. And I don't know who got the history on it.
Well, Esther D. Nylon might have been one of the people on that. Of course, Ben's always been at Erickson. He had a lot of... So he might have been the one that... Was he back here then?
1939 is when he came.
Yeah. You know, somebody has a picture of it, you know.
Yes, right. We've got the script, and of course, one of the words in there, they refer to the savages.
Uh huh.
And that somebody brought that up as a. It would not go with today's.
I mean, it wasn't correct.
Well, yes, right, but civil rights would not allow that today.
Oh, you used the word savage.
Yeah, right. Isn't that something, though? That would be... But we've got to find that. I don't know where it is, but I've looked for it. You know, one time I spent 3 or 4 days tracking it down by phone, and I just gave up because I couldn't find it, and I'll have to start all over again sometime.
I think it's in the city garage.
That's probably where I finally ended up. I got that far, and that was the dead end. I haven't found it.
Of course, that's a problem with all historical things, you know, is try to keep track of them. It costs money to keep track of it unless you have an interest in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's for
maybe,
sure.
Maybe I ought to go over to the garage and see if I can find it.
Yeah, you should. Yeah. It's probably stuck away someplace over there, and whoever put it there just didn't let anyone know, and maybe he's forgotten, whoever that might be. Well.
All right, what else do you want to talk about?
Well, let's see. we ought to get back. You know, one thing I'd like to know. Your... this has nothing to do with business, but your the days on Spring Lake, the cottage situation. You had cottages on the river first.
Yeah, one the families on the river.
Okay.
On the high bank.
First cottage on the high banks.
Okay.
The high bank, yeah.
Now, this is when you were, would this have been in the 20s?
30s.
30s.
In the 30s.
We moved.
I think 1937, we bought the Spring Lake cottage. And then
1940s, when they built the present ones.
39.
I got the, in fact, I've got the, now I've got a clipping out of a paper.
I've got the
1940, there were both cottages.
Yeah, but they was built in 39 because I got the receipt.
First summer, though, is 1940.
Yeah, first summer is 1940.
Because they had a big article of paper. But the Jacobson, so the Jacobson cottage, which was called Anchor Inn, we had at least for 1 year, maybe two.
2 years.
2 years. And then we bought the Oriel cottage, which was next door. And
Bauman.
It was owned by Bauman, yeah.
So that, that's
where our family, and our family moved into that one. And then those were torn down. We probably had that a couple of years, so we must have had that back. But
37 is when, for 36.
We must have had that one.
36, 37.
30, now that'd be about right.
38 and 38, they bought the Bauman and used.
They built the cottage probably in the winter of 1939. I know. 1940 is the year.
The first summer that we.
First summer they were in it. And
so you really didn't become involved with Spring Lake.
Well, so the Lake Yacht Club. We were the yacht club from. Right. Well, it's. Right, probably about, probably a couple years prior to that, so probably about 1932.
What would 50 years ago? We won the West Michigan in 1938.
I think it was about 32.
That we owned the Green Dragon.
The Green Dragon, and at that time, we originally were racing. We had four of us. We had four skippers. We had Al Sr., my dad, and Chuck and I, all four of us. We used to fight. And, of course, bail. He had to bail, too.
They were winning boats, of course. And you always kept them out of the water to keep them light.
Well, no, we didn't do that first one. That was stayed in the water, so it was
soaked up. Yeah, okay.
I'm going to say it.
Kind of anchored up there.
Yep. Yeah. The bay was an awful boats that were anchored there.
And when you say the bay, in there by
where
you?
Where the docks are now.
Where the docks are now.
Oh, okay. At Barrett's.
At Barrett's.
Okay.
So so I would say that was probably, had to be around 32 or something. Bill Stribley's the one that
got him started.
Got us started.
Stribley,
he was the secretary of the Chamber of Commerce.
That's right, okay, sure.
And the yacht club was going.
Hunter Robbins was the driving force for the yacht club.
Yeah.
And it was still located where it is now.
Yeah, except they were in a boathouse in Thumb. I guess it's a Thumb boathouse.
Uh-huh.
Which was really sort of neat, But the yacht club's never been healthier than it is today. You got more activity going.
Oh, yeah.
You sort of think back and get a lot of fun in the old one.
Well, you're still competing, Al, aren't you?
Oh, yeah.
And your MC?
Yeah. The high water is the thing that did that in age, I guess. High water really did the yacht club in. That was the last high water before this current high water.
Yeah, right. And that would have been in the 50s. 52, 3, somewhere in there.
The Muskegon Yacht Club closed during the Depression. And I think three boats came down. I can remember Paul Johnson, what was M23. Mm-hmm. They came down to sail the E-boats.
The Spring Lake Paul Johnson, or the
Muskegon
Paul Johnson. Yeah.
Still powerful.
And the Beardsley.
The Beardsleys.
And the cannons.
That's right. So they came out. Well, Yakov Poz during the Depression of Muskegon, so they came down and sailed Arizona after the Depression was sort of over. They restarted the Muskegon.
Yeah, but Beardsley stayed here then. Beardsley built it.
They were already living down there.
Oh, they were.
The Cannons were living here too.
Yeah, that's right.
On Spring Lake?
In the Bennett House.
Huh. Didn't know that.
Yeah, that's right.
Huh. And the Bears from Chicago.
Nope. Mm-hmm. My mother at one time, before she was married, she was secretary to all three. Campbell, White, and Cannon. They only had one girl in the office, and she was a...
You dared.
We used to go up to the Emma and Emma Wyant's house, and of course Ira Wyant was the only one around living, but he used to remind me of that every time we would go up to the place.
You know, you're talking about Bauman. I heard that Bauman was either the first, and Hessel was the second, the little village of Hessel, or vice versa, the first Chris Craft franchise ever granted.
Bauman, Bauman was the largest Chris Craft dealer in the world during the 30s.
I'll be darned. And
we bought our first Chris Craft from George Savage,
right?
It was just well before the Depression. You needed cash. Hmm. You know, I didn't pay very much on it. I don't remember that, but you remember how much you paid for it? I know it was a very small amount.
Well, he was not in the business. It was his, and used
by. Bought it. It was practically new. Uh-huh. Hardly been used. A lot of cash.
Now you want? I can understand why Hessel with. With the Lacheneau Islands, everyone had to have a boat to get around. But Spring Lake, they were just pleasure crafts. You know, you need them for transportation. And they were the biggest in the world.
Yep.
I'll be darned. They had to sell elsewhere then.
Yeah, but of course, that's like all enterprises, you know. It really starts because somebody starts and has the enthusiasm. Bauman was a good salesman. He was a cripple, but he was really a good salesman. Look at all the businesses that, if you really think about the cereal business, why would Battle Creek, they don't have any products that are, they have to bring everything in.
Don't have a wheat field at their back door.
There's not a damn thing, and here they are, the headquarters of two of the largest cereal companies in the country just because they were started there.
For health reasons,
true. Yeah. Bauman was always right next door to you there.
Yeah.
Where the
right at the end of Alden.
Yeah,
where were the Polomeras. In fact, that Tom Alberta, their family bought the Bauman business.
And went to the North Shore.
The North Shore.
When that place burned, all of the they had. The complete description of all of the Chris Crafts from, I guess, year one right up to the present time, they all burned in that fire. And that was one of the great losses, they figured, because it was a history that maybe nobody else has.
Very possible.
Yeah.
Talking about that, though, I remember when... Hunter had a Hacker Craft.
No. Oh, boy.
Let's see. Have you ever heard that story?
No, but Hacker Craft.
Hacker and Chris Craft. Let's see. I think Hunter had the Hacker, and Cannons had the Chris Craft, but one way around, and they had the showdown race on Spring Lake.
Hacker was a University of Michigan graduate, and he went into competition with Smith.
Yeah,
Chris Craft. Yeah, and I bet you guys were at the bank watching it.
Yeah, they had the showdown race here, one of the showdown races in Springway.
Just, I can
were there
remember,
three or two?
I don't know. We used to have some races. I can remember racing that Spray in one race. That was so damn slow. But anyway, God, we had just two people. We got one up on the bow, you know.
Yeah,
we'll
try to, yeah. Oh, sure, yeah. Get that bow
get
down.
Get that bow down.
Yeah. Get it flaming. Gee. Well, there was a place up on White Lake at Whitehall, and the fellow showed me where the stands used to be, and it would be over on the north side of the lake.
Well, that was over at what's his name, that guy that, you know.
And they had races there.
Begins with something like Soden or something like that.
Yes, that's it. You got it. Uh-huh. And he showed me that they used to. They had grandstands there, and they'd have races right up.
Yeah.
Do you ever take the Spray up there to race?
No.
Spray went up there to go to follow the races, you know, the regattas and that.
Do you know a fella that restores Chris Crafts up in her wooden boats? It's the Traverse City Mahogany Boat Company up in Traverse City, and does a beautiful job. He says that Chris Craft today still holds the 24-hour speed record, 62 miles an hour, running constantly for 24 hours. It was set years and probably set in the 30s. And no one has broken that. Even with these high-powered boats that we see out here racing, they can't sustain that speed that those boats back in those days could hold. And durable engines in them.
Well, yeah. They sacrifice for the speed. They have these short runs. They sacrifice the weight. And every one of these damn powerboat races, some of those engines give out.
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
They carry spares with them.
Yeah. Spare propellers, spare engines. Yeah. A whole cadre of a whole fleet goes with these boats to keep them going. How did Hanky Panky Bio get his name?
That's after.
Well, that's modern.
That's yeah. Quite modern because yeah. Way it was always called. I forgot the name of the bio right now. But it was always called
Jerusalem?
Hopkins Bio.
Hopkins. Okay.
But Hanky Panky is that's.
Yeah, that's.
It was probably the last 30 years.
Yeah.
Since they've been enough boats to do it. In the old days, they didn't have enough boats.
Yeah.
That's where the seaplane was docked, isn't it?
Yeah. That's at the Judson's.
Uh-huh.
That concrete, I think, is still there. It's laying there showing.
Did you ever see that take off?
I did, sure. Yeah.
Supposedly, he flew that thing to Detroit.
Chicago.
Oh, was it Chicago? And it was a commuter-type situation for him, is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty risky.
Well, we used to see it all the time because every race went up to Pine's Buoy.
Yeah.
Buoy there. We had one standard sailboat race. We'd start at the yacht club, go to Barrett, down to Lake Avenue, up to Pine's, back to Lake Avenue, up to Barrett's, and down to Lake Avenue and finish. That was the standard race. Regardless where the wind came from.
Then Smith's Bayou.
That race did where people saw the races.
Yeah.
They never saw it any other because you covered the
whole
lake.
Now when you say saw the races from shore or was
from shore.
It
well everybody on the lake would see the sailboat.
You got longer runs.
Yeah.
Well if you had the right wind you
did. Did you have a fleet following you, though?
Not like you did. No. There weren't boats then.
Yeah.
And having a speedboat was unusual.
Yeah.
There were some launches. The bikes had a launch. I can remember Junior was Frank Viper. Rito was almost a contemporary. But anyway, everybody called him Junior. And he was always a little slow getting on. His father got quite impatient. I could still see that launch. It was a
great big thing.
Open?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And the engine in the middle?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. just chug, 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 chug.
Well, it went along pretty good. You know, I think it must have had a pretty good screw on it.
Yeah. And to me, it was the biggest engine I could see.
Of course, the biggest boat we had was the Half Moon.
Yes, that darn thing. It was 1903, I think it was.
You know, I can remember going to board and I was a kid on that thing. I thought, my God, this is the biggest damn thing I ever seen. Well, then, you know, it was docked right opposite at Barrett's. When I went aboard, I couldn't believe it. That was the tiniest, most cramped thing I ever saw. It was really terrible.
That's kind of like your neighborhood shrinks. You go back to it and you see how short it is from this house over here. Boy, it used to take you a day to ride your tricycle up there.
That's about the way it was. I couldn't believe it. Now I can't remember, but it seems like the engine was occupied most of the stateroom, or most of the salon.
Listen, one other thing. When I get together with Constant, and although Rothy is, he's North End, he's up there with Ivan Foschein, but Constant, Van Hoff, they're East Enders. Uh-huh. And you guys, what would you be, the Hill folk or the West Enders? Or you didn't have a gang or a ball team? They're always talking about their ball teams out there.
Well, the East End, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, well, I would say, we've been pretty much the same area.
Yeah.
We're at Greenhill.
Of course, they went to Perry School, and you're Central School.
Central School, yeah. Well, we had Greenhill, where the high school is now.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's where we did all our activity.
Just an open
in our immediate.
Oh, yeah.
I think we had three, or really four families, but three particularly. Had the Jacobsons, the Johnsons, and the DeWitts all had six kids. And there
each had three boys,
and three girls in each family. And then the Addisons, Dr. Addison's family had six too, but they weren't quite as, but they were involved. So you had a pretty good group. So there usually was a matching thing all the way, pretty much along the way.
Huh. And all in that neighborhood.
And the Baltz. Sure. Seeing the Baltz family.
The Baltz family.
What Baltz? Would that be Russ?
Yeah, Russ and his old brother Stan.
He lived on Lafayette.
And then, of course, we had there were slightly older, but they were right behind us with the Biddings.
The Biddings.
The soul.
The Biddings.
That'd be Bill.
Bill Bidding.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And there were three Biddings.
They lived on Lafayette. And we go right in back of Paul.
Yeah.
So they're all growing up were the Biddings.
So it was
DeWitt, Edison's, or Johnson's.
Well, you didn't have probably, I was thinking Green Hill would be quite a ways, but there's only three blocks up the way.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And there were no homes out there.
Another family you can put in there is Glenn Nigren.
Oh, yeah.
A steel product.
Yeah. That's right. They came back.
Oh, sure.
After the war.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're right. Nigren and who was the other one you mentioned?
Lee and Glenn Nigren.
Oh, Lee. Yeah, Lee. Yeah, the Lee and Nigren family. The hospital had not been built out where it is now.
Oh, no, no, no.
Because I've heard you refer to the Hatton Hospital.
That's one of them. That's right where
the Hatton Hospital
or the Presbyterian Church.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There's a big debate on the hospitals whether it would be tear down the Congregational Church, which is where the fire barn
sure,
is right now.
That's right.
And build it there versus out here.
Uh-huh.
That was a very bitter city dispute.
And the Congregational Church mysteriously burned. Was it about that time?
I don't know. Well, the Congregational Church was...
It was gone by then.
Gone.
That. Yeah.
It was... The building was physically there.
Oh, was it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The building was physically
there. The congregation was gone.
But it was empty. The congregation was gone.
Yeah. Most of the stones in that building were used to build a bin house out on Spring Lake, which would be was right next to Gloomy Smith's, which would be I can't think of the name of that guy who owns that now.
This after it burned.
Yeah, after the church burned, but I butted in, it was in the hauling division, you know, and I suppose he hauled the
stones, there were a lot of stones mm-hmm. In the church, and that was their house was built.
There's still a stone right next to the driveway as you go in the fire barn, Congregational Church.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, in the lawn, still there.
That's
yeah.
great.
Yeah. I don't know.
They must have put that in for the
fire barn. I suspect so. It looks like it's been there forever, but you know, it only had to be there for a couple months and it looked like it's been there forever.
Usually the church doesn't put a stone in the lawn.
Right.
And it came off the thing, and that's when they saved it.
That could be, yeah. Well, you guys got to get out of here.
I got to have get some phone calls.
We've got almost an hour of rambling.
Basketball on the top of the...
Get my cord back.
Just as we closed there, Al said, I want to tell you one other thing about the way we used to play basketball. And at that point, Paul didn't realize I had turned the tape recorder back on, but he said, I'll take my extension cord and put it back where it belongs. And so he unplugged this. But Al was telling us how they played basketball as kids on the top floor of the Salvation Army. That's where Jack Brown now lives, and they play racquetball up there now. Kind of a different game of racquetball, but that's what they call it. And then he said that the Akeley Institute, had been closed by that time, and so the kids would find their way into that gym and play. But at that point, as I say, Al is not on the record saying that. As is usually the case, there was a good bit of what they had to say, and I wish that we could have recorded it prior to the taping of this, when they wanted to make sure that what they were going to be saying was correct. And as they went on for maybe 10 minutes, I said, this is the sort of thing we're trying to record. Let me turn the tape recorder on now. Well, we didn't get any of that because I was in hopes that they would repeat some of the material that they were relating prior to the time that we began taping. Nevertheless, it was a good session. Very enjoyable. There is so much more that they know about the community and phases of the community that we'll have to delve into later. But for now, we'll call this the JSJ tape, the beginning of the founding of JSJ, which all began with the Brass Foundry back in 1919. And they have since acquired in sequence the Grand Haven Stamp Products, Dake. Miller Sherwood then moved here with his plastic business. And, of course, now it amounts to, get out the book here and see how many they have now. Carlin Meter was the most recent, which made them five, and now they have an additional 1, 2, 3, 4 businesses added to JSJ, so it all adds up to 9 different businesses that JSJ has. And I think there is a 10th one beginning, which is a furniture business, and that's going to be run out of the Grand Haven Stamp Products. So you can see that what all began way back there in 19, which would have made it 70 years ago, has really become the foundation of businesses in Grand Haven today. So this is Dave Seibold signing off on this tape, and we'll pick it up on another tape.